Ciao, Bellas. Welcome back to Radio Vision. It's your boy, John Swansong Parker, and Zach Rotello at Zach Rotello. We are back. Radio Vision, our coverage of Batman, the animated series, episode 22 of Radio Vision. We have been rewatching Batman, the animated series, and reviewing it episode by episode, and we are more than 55 episodes into Batman, the animated series, and it's been a ride. Zach, how you feel? Checking in. Episode 22. Vibes. What's going on? Full burrito.
What do you get when you're blind as a bat?
Tell me what you would think of that.
I'm good. How are you?
You need to write more jingles. Yeah. More jingles. That'd be great.
Well, everyone's been saying, you know, Radio Vision, it's a popular show. Everyone loves the show, the podcast. We got the best show. Everybody loves the show. But what doesn't it have enough of? Doesn't have enough of those catchy jingles, you know?
No jingles.
You've got the news flashpoint. That's a jingle. But it's like we don't have
which
anything.
Which we stole, but yeah.
Did we?
Yeah, we stole it from Batman, 1966.
I don't know. I'd call it an adaptation.
Influenced
How about that?
By? Yeah, influenced sure. By. Well, hey, you know, I love watching these episodes of Batman the Animated Series and talking with you about it. And
me too.
If you're tuning in and this is your first time and you're like, what the heck is going on? Maybe go back and start with the first episode. But, you know, we're talking about Batman the Animated Series. So don't, you know, don't turn it off entirely if you're really familiar with Batman the Animated Series.
Don't do it.
We are just going in production order of the way that the creators of the show wanted to. We are in volume 3 out of 4 by the DVD standards is how I've been watching them on Vudu. And Zach, we got a little known podcast called Radiovania as well. So like you and I, we're like Ryan Reynolds. We're just diversifying our portfolio. We're all over the place. We're thinking about buying FC Cincinnati pretty soon and making a documentary called Welcome to Cincy. It's going to be great.
Little do people know, we actually have a majority stake in cricket. So we're going to start selling mobile phones here.
We're just going to compete with Ryan and Rob. Yeah.
And then all we need to do after that is just hear me out, if we can dupe some small whiskey distillery in Kentucky into making a bourbon for our podcast, I think that we would officially call ourselves made it.
What would you name the bourbon?
We'd have to work on that one. I don't know. Whiskey Vaney.
Whiskeyvania?
No, how about no, that's bad. How about what if it was like Swan Song but spelled like really like ornately?
Okay.
It's like Swan Song bottled and bond 10-year bourbon.
Okay.
That sounds pretty good. Radiovania logo stamped
onto it. I like this.
Sure.
It sounds cool.
It's like a couple of microphones. It's like a really classily sounding name, cuz think about it. That's like probably the classiest thing that we've got on this show. We're talking about
Everyone knows that swans are majestic creatures, and if the name swan is attached to anything, it's most likely going to be fancy.
Or it's never too late tier, bound, barreled and bottled and bound.
That's what I was going to say. We just get the Two-Face label. That'd be amazing. Right. Yeah. Well, you know, if you want to hear about what the Swan Song inside joke is, perhaps you should go check out Radiovania, and you could do that in a number of different ways. Radiovania.com is the easiest. They'll take you. Link you to all the podcast episodes. We also got youtube.com. You just go on there if you heard of YouTube and then you search for Radiovania. It's one word. It should take you to our channel where you have, we got some videos up there, some old ones, some new ones. It's good stuff. If you want to get in contact with us, hit us up, radiovaniashow@gmail.com. Send us some things, send us some messages, you know, or if you're like, hey, what are you guys going to do when you're done covering Batman in 2034, and we'll be like, well, this is what we're planning. And then check us out on the socials where you can see all of Zach's wonderful posts that he puts when new episodes are up. And you can do that Radiovania Show on Instagram. It's the easiest. Oh, there you go. Nice job getting into the focus this time. I'm now podcasting with the Joker, not Zach. So
this is your dream. Think about it. This is actually your dream. If you could do a podcast.
Podcasting
with the Joker.
With Mark Hamill's Joker is actually That would be like,
John, you're as blind as a bat.
That's good. That's really good.
Thanks. I've been working on my Joker laugh.
I love it. It's like dinner for five. You know what I mean? Like, you know how people are always like, if you could have dinner with five people, alive or dead, I feel like mine would be like podcast for one, and it's just like me and Mark Hamill's Joker.
That's a good name for a spinoff podcast. If you were ever going to do a spinoff show, podcast for one.
Podcast for one.
That sounds pretty good.
Podcast for one, no smoking. Oh, man. Zach, you want to talk about some Batman the Animated Series episodes?
I would love to. First off, I want to give another shout out to our special guest, Mark, who came on last
Mark.
Week.
Last episode of Radio.
Or Living. Last episode. Yeah, whenever that went live. Thank you again. And thank you everyone in the Radio Vadium audience for making such a warm welcome to him. He was great on the show. Can't wait to have him back.
For sure. For sure. And this week, before you continue listening to the podcast, dear listener, make sure you are caught up on the episodes that we're talking about. We plug them at the end of each episode in the prior episode, but I'll give you a refresher right now in case you want to pause and watch the episodes. This week we are covering Blind as a Bat and then The Demon's Quest Part 1 and Part 2. So go check those out and then come back. Zachary.
Lots of episodes we've had recently with these two-parters, man. I mean, I feel like
you literally took the words out of my mouth. Any two-parter fatigue at all? Do you want to save your thoughts? Or like, I feel like you typically, for some of the episodes, you're like, I wish this was longer. If you kind of viewed the two-parters as one giant episode, which is, you know, how it's supposed to be intended, although it did have week breaks, you know what I mean, when it aired. What's your thought on them so far? We've had like six different two-parters easily.
No, I think that the two-parters are cool. I like the idea of like, you know, building it up. And I think we'll save my deeper thoughts on the two-parter until we get to the episodes. But
sure.
Let's just say this as a little tease. Each one of these two-parters that I think we've done follows a similar rhythm. And I think that I'm probably going to feel the same way about these than I do other episodes. But we'll save my in-depth thoughts until we get there.
The funny thing is like when if you were to watch this in like quote unquote chronological order of when these shows came out in time, after this, you would get to Justice League, you know what I mean? Before Batman Begins, when you're in the Justice League seasons, every episode is a two-parter, every single one. Because there's so many characters, it's an ensemble. Like the only way they could capture an episode where enough people get like a decent amount of an arc is through two-parters. There's maybe two or three single episodes in Justice League. Obviously, when it gets to Justice League Unlimited, a little bit of a different story. There's a lot of single episodes there. But just the first two seasons of Justice League, where it's just the original seven characters, all two-parters, sometimes even three.
Holy moly. We're not doing that show, right? That's not part of this run. We're not doing
it. It is
Justice
not, but
League.
It is highly recommended from your boy. Yeah. Highly recommended. No, I actually sent you a schedule for because we are in the back half now of this coverage. So the only thing we will be doing to dip out of Batman the Animated Series is what I think is a pretty damn near essential foray into the Superman animated series world so that we can watch the crossover World's Finest, because that does canonically come back into play in Batman the Animated Series in the last season. So, and it's a fucking great movie. So, you know,
sounds great. I'm down.
Oh, okay, cool. You're down. Awesome.
I'm down. You're the god of this show. If you told me that you were like, well, actually, to understand Batman the Animated Series episode 49, we actually need to watch 20 episodes of the Justice League cartoon, I'd be like, well, you're in the driver's seat, so I guess I can't argue.
Yeah. The thing that I've thought about doing is watching Epilogue, which is an episode of Justice League Unlimited that is kind of Batman the Animated Series, kind of Batman Beyond. We talked about it in Kevin Conroy's In Memoriam thing. But that would only be just as like a bookend to talking about Batman the Animated Series as a whole. Yeah. When we do kind of like a recap pod. But we got a ways to go before we do that. So why don't we go ahead and get this thing underway?
Sounds like a plan to me, buddy.
Yeah. Our first episode this week is Blind as a Bat, written by Mike Underwood and Len Wein, long running comic artist on previous episodes. You've heard me talk about Len Wein before. He's the co-creator of Swamp Thing and Wolverine. Ever heard of him? So, amongst other characters in the comic book world, both Marvel and DC. Very cool. And this episode is directed by Dan Ribba, who recently was a new director in our Batman the Animated Series rewatch, but would go on to direct a lot of Batman Beyond and Justice League and other DC animated universe projects, as I'm sure Zach is about to touch on.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of stole the words out of my mouth, but yeah, this is the second time that we're seeing this guy directing an episode. The last time that we saw Dan Reba direct anything was episode Zatanna. He mm-hmm. was the director on that guy. But beyond that,
fun episode.
Yeah, Zatanna, Blind as a Bat, and then a bunch of stuff that we have not covered yet, seasons 1, 2, and 3. He was also director of 13 episodes of Alf.
Like Alf the Puppet?
Yes, Alf the Puppet. He directed...
Fun fact, time out real quick. When I was a kid, you know, I would mix up Alf and Alf Alpha from Little Rascals. I thought they were the same person.
Oh, boy. That seems like a complicated mix-up. One's a puppet, one's a literal human person. But...
Yeah. But can you imagine the Little Rascals with Alf instead?
That'd be great. Oh, make gosh, guys.
Yeah, it's like Muppet's Christmas Carol with children. Yeah.
Dan Reba also directed 52 episodes of the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. You familiar with this bad boy?
I think that's like the cartoon, right?
It is the animated cartoon Mario series, but it's most importantly the series that starts with the Mario rap. You remember the Mario rap? We're the Mario Brothers, and we're here to say that we love plumbing in a major way. It's like that shit. Yeah, it's terrible. He is also the sequence director on Batman Mask of the Phantasm. He was the series director on Freakazoid. He also directed the TV movie Superman Last Son of Krypton. Have you seen this thing?
That is the pilot for Superman the Animated Series.
Okay, cool. Well, he's listed as the director.
Yeah, really cool shit. Okay. Way better than Man of Steel.
He also directed 8 episodes of the new Batman Adventures. He directed, he was a segment director for Batman Beyond, the movie. And he was the director of Superman, the 15 episodes of Superman, the animated series. So this dude goes on to do quite a bit of stuff. And then going forward on his resume, it's like 13 episodes of Batman Beyond, Justice League Starcross, Justice League Unlimited, Ben 10, Dino Trucks.
Dude, Starcross is really cool. That's when the Hawk people invade Earth. It's tight. Really good shit.
This guy's got a serious DC resume.
Yeah. We love it. Dan, come on the pod.
We'd love
I want to talk to you about Starcrossed. I want to talk to you about so many things from that. That is a great season finale and a series finale for Justice League before they went to Justice League Unlimited. But I'm not going to spoil it for Zach because it's so good. Zachary, title card. Watch Blind as a Bat. Here's my hot take. Okay, ready? This is the best part of the episode for me. I think.
What?
I thought the title card was cool. I love the font. I think the font is very like noir detective. Like you could see this pop up on the screen in like a 1930s or 40s detective movie where it's like Casablanca almost, even where it rolls in front of actual film footage. The background itself is, you know, a little weird, but I love the silhouette of the Batman. That's cool.
Yeah, I don't love this one. I don't know what it is, but it looks... Here's the first thing I thought of when I saw this. I was like, this looks like a shitty...
Count Vertigo.
Huh?
I thought Vertigo was bad. Vertigo. I forgot that this is Penguin, but yeah.
I saw this, and the first thing I thought of was, I was like, this looks like a shitty signposting outside of, like, a ride at Paramount's Kings Island. Like, if they were going to have a Batman roller coaster, and they were like, this way to the Batman roller coaster, Blind as a Bat, this is what it looked like. Like, I don't know why, but it looked like oddly reminiscent of, and this is the most, probably the most niche reference I've ever made on this entire fucking podcast.
Drop it.
This, speaking of drops, this looks like the drop zone. So shout out to Paramount's Kings Island, now Cedar Fair's Kings Island, which soon to be maybe Six Flags Kings Island. Don't know if you heard about that.
Because of the Warner Brothers merger. Yeah.
Yeah, they might buy that shit out.
You know what that means, though, is that means that there could be Cedar Point rides that are named after DC characters, which for me is really cool.
That would be cool. They renamed Top Thrill Dragster to
Joker. They will never rename that or like Millennium Force or things like that, but all like the lesser known ones,
Magnum, Superman. They're gonna rename Magnum 9000 or whatever, that fucking that wooden coaster,
Brainiac
9000. Remember that wooden roller coaster that we went on at Cedar Point?
Steel Vengeance. That'll the one be in the man very of back Steel of Vengeance.
Yeah, dude. That, oh, I'm in.
Yeah, it writes itself, man.
It writes itself.
Yeah. All right, well, here's our little 2-minute plot synopsis. Bear with me here. Well, not for this one necessarily. The Demon's Quest has some beefy plot. This one's pretty quick. At a Wayne Tech demonstration, a new stealth helicopter is given a trial run in front of the military. Unfortunately, during the weapons demo, the flight crew is revealed to be the Penguin's gang, who muscle their way into the Raven helicopter and are holding it for ransom. During their escape, Bruce Wayne is caught in an explosion and is blinded. Great reveal where he's in the back of the limo and Alfred's like, what should we do next? He's like, tell them that I can't see. It's awesome. It's so good. Leslie Tompkins comes by the Wayne Manor and informs Bruce that he needs to keep his eyes covered for 36 hours or risk permanently damaging his retinas. Commissioner Gordon and Harvey Bullock meet with the mayor, who is assessing the $100 million ransom from the Penguin. Penguin, worried that the mayor is stalling, displays that he means business by shooting cables off a suspension bridge. A lot of bridges in Gotham always falling. You know, it's crazy. Leslie Tompkins helps Batman create a visual shield that he can wear under his cowl. It's like a big bicycle helmet with goggles. And it not only protects his retinas, but it also provides a very limited Daredevil ripoff vision. So he can like see things. It's like this red and black night vision almost, where he can only see silhouettes. The animation of that's really cool, though. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Mayor Hill admits that he will not be able to come up with the ransom, but Batman arrives just in time to formulate a plan by playing into the Penguin's hands. When Penguin and company arrive at the ransom rendezvous, they are ambushed by the Batwing. Batman disables the Raven with spiky balls that he drops on top of the rotors, but he's still shot out of the sky in the process. Almost out of his ocular charge for his headset, Batman flees into a nearby foundry. Penguin's gang can tell that he's injured in some way, and they seize their opportunity to snuff out the Bat. When it's just down to Penguin and Batman, Batman's headset finally dies, leaving him completely blind. Hanging for his life above molten metal, Batman feels around and finds a pipe with emergency water supplies. He turns it on and creates a massive steam cloud, then hearing the Penguin's coughing, he knocks out the evildoer by landing on top of him. That is the second time in back-to-back Penguin episodes where somebody just jumps on him, and then they it's like a bully sitting on you on the playground.
He's easily defeated. It's his calling card here.
Yeah. Leslie removes Bruce's bandages after the 36-hour mark, and his sight has returned just in time to see that Penguin's arrest is on the front page of the newspaper. Zach.
What
do you think of Blind as a Bat?
I don't know. It sounds like I might be in the minority on this one. I actually kind of thought this episode was really funny and goofy.
I don't dislike it. I just think it's... Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
It is what it is. It's I just thought that the gimmick was kind of clever, and I liked the kind of, I'm not going to say Blade Runner aspect of it, but I like the more subdued, like Batman has a struggle that he's trying to overcome to fight crime. I like that he's like kind of incapacitated in a way where sure. It's like he has this thing that he has to overcome to like be able to fight these guys. Now, it's not done in the most clever of manners, but the idea is cool. I also think that Penguin is most menacing here. Like,
for sure.
I like that he's not like bumbling around and like knocking into stuff. Like, he actually
he's
is kind of
menacing in the mechanic, too.
Sure. But
yeah. In he's this getting one, better, though. Like, his episodes better. Are getting much better. I will agree with you.
In this one, he has like the umbrella sniper rifle. He's shooting at Batman, which I am a sucker for. I like that concept. I like that he shoots him with the umbrella. I
love umbrella tricks.
Yeah. And I really like the visual like look of the bat vision thing, like the red outlines of everything. It's almost like it's kind of like Batman Predator. That's kind of like what this episode kind of felt like, is like, you know, he's
or
like
the Terminator
people. Yeah. Terminator, sure. Oh, big Terminator energy, especially in the smelting plant or whatever, where it's like all the magma everywhere or whatever.
Dum,
it's
dum,
like
dum 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 dum.
Yeah. I liked the episode quite a bit. It was goofy, but you know, and usually the thing that we've talked about over these, you know, 40 something episodes, I don't know how many episodes we're on, 50 something episodes, it's like the action heavy episodes tend to be some of my least favorite, because I like the more character driven Batman stuff in these shows, but this is one where it's like mostly action and I found myself like pretty engaged, so I'll give it points for that. But what did you think of this guy?
I thought it was perfectly like a fun, okay episode of Batman the Animated Series. You know, I think I agree with you. It's got some pretty solid Penguin content in it. I think it's absolutely deranged that he's able to fly the Batwing. Like, absolutely insane. And I do think that the final confrontation is what pushes it, like, into the like, salvageable good episode for me. Because I think that how he takes down the Penguin in the Foundry, that whole last minute, like, sequence is really cool. It's also, like, animated really beautifully with the molten magma everywhere and, like, Batman, like, trying to throw batarangs at stuff and missing, like, and Penguin, like, kind of putting it together, what's going on. I think that sequence itself is really awesome. I think I'm just not, like... I didn't find it to be a super, like, fun original idea for Batman, I guess, because of the comp to Daredevil. But he's, like, bad Daredevil because he can't use the radar sense very well. So,
well, something that I think is interesting is that the episode. So I don't know if this ever comes back in any meaningful respect whatsoever. But the very beginning of the episode sets it in a really interesting way, right? Bruce Wayne is attending this event for these, like, multi-million dollar weapons of mass destruction, essentially. They're doing a demo test.
Tony Stark. Yeah.
He's basically Tony Stark. Weapon.
Yeah.
But I think that that's actually kind of an interesting idea to put Bruce Wayne, who is also Batman, the crime vigilante of this city of Gotham, watching this display that he's, like, backing because of, like, Wayne Tech and all this, like, his ties with his economics and his, like, personal life and his politics. But deep down he knows, like, oh, these machines probably aren't going to be very good for me because I'm a fucking crime fighter vigilante. What happens if the bad guys get a hold of this? But then that quickly gets diverted and they don't really touch on that aspect at all for the rest of the show, except for the fact that they're in the smelting factory where they're, like, creating the weapons. That's basically the payoff. Is that right?
I don't know if it's the same one that they're
building. If it's not, that's lame as fuck. If it's not, that's lame as fuck. It should
I love
be.
That interpretation. I really don't know if they thought into it that much. It's definitely, like, in the foundry yard near the river where, like, in case they need to flood things, if, like, stuff catches on fire. I would assume it's still the Wayne Tech area, though.
It should be, because that makes sense, like, full circle writing, right? Like, you have Bruce Wayne at this event at the very beginning showing these weapons. He's clearly not a fan of them. And at the very end, you have him, like, fighting for his life in the same place where they're making the weapons. Like, that makes sense. But
I
again,
do
like
that
said,
part
it's
where he's
unclear.
Like, I'm not overly fond of the violent nature of this machine. Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah. So I like that idea. And I don't know if they ever do, like, another episode like this, but it seems like that seems like big wasted potential. Like, very big.
There is other content with Batman and his company wanting, like, people wanting his company to develop weapons that he doesn't believe in, which is cool. Did you have a favorite cell of animation from this at all?
I'm pretty sure it's this episode. I didn't take a specific note, but I'm pretty sure there's a really dope ass shot of the Batwing when it flies in, and it's like an underpan shot of it, like, silhouetted kind of.
Yep.
I remember I really like that shit.
That's this episode, yeah.
That is this episode. If not that, like, I just shout out to all the animation in the smelting battle at the end. Like, I really did like the animation of the magma, the fire, like, everything being... It was very complicated animation, like, all the fire and stuff and all the fighting in between. So it's a technically impressive episode, but the Batwing shots, gotta give it to them. What about you?
I like the steam in the molten, like, furnace area takedown. I think that looks really cool.
Yeah.
The way they animate that is awesome. Very fluid. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
got some
did
trivia.
You have any other closing trivia? Oh, okay, cool.
Got some trivia. I'm going to fill the trivia void here. This is the final episode in which Penguin is the main antagonist. Soon after the season, the revamp emerged and Penguin became reformed, although Batman occasionally questioned him about other crimes of which he had knowledge. Can you speak on this?
Iceberg Lounge. That's where I will leave it.
Okay. We'll leave it there.
He's a continuing recurring character. But you know, like in Gotham Knights where he's like an informant, same within the Batman actually, where he's like an informant running the Iceberg Lounge, becomes like that.
Cool.
Because clearly he's not a physical match for Batman. So I think they just ran out of good ideas to do that. I think that the Penguin as an informant / gang boss, much cooler.
Way better
than him trying to go toe to toe with Batman. Yeah.
Agreed. Penguin deduces that the Batwing must carry a cloaking device identical to the Raven's, but somehow doesn't seem to make the connection between Wayne Enterprises and Batman.
It's amazing. I love it.
Interesting trivia there. Not really trivia.
No one puts it together except for Andrea Beaumont and Clark Kent. Yeah.
This is the second episode to feature Batman with red eyes. The first being... You got a guess?
Ooh, this is a good question.
Red Test eyes. Your Batman the Animated Series knowledge here. This is the second episode to feature Batman with red eyes. The first one is what?
Oh, man. Something that he needs night vision for, I think. I don't remember.
I don't think we've even gotten to this episode yet.
What is it? Yeah.
The episode is his silicon soul.
Oh, that's next week.
That's next week? Okay.
It's Hardak. Yeah, next week. Yep.
Okay. This episode's
the
titled...
first, like, in airing order episode. Or second episode, I should say. Got it. Silicon Soul.
This episode's title is also used as a riddle in the live-action film Batman Forever.
Yep.
Blind as a bat. And the last trivia fact here is that the music that's played on the car radio right before the Penguin destroys the bridge is also the same music played in Almost Got Him.
That's cool.
So one of the music singers is played here again.
Penguin's little theme. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
All right. Any closing thoughts for this one?
No, not for me. I like the episode. I just, you know, it's perfectly fine. I'm curious to know where you want to rank it.
Speaking of which, every episode after we talk about each individual one, all three per episode of the pod, we rank it in our master spreadsheet here that we have going on, or list, I should say. And we have this list of so far 58 episodes. So we'll be topping 60 episodes this week. But we have it broken down into tiers. And the tiers are as follows. You got S tier, which is like cream of the crop, your Almost Gothams, your Perchance to Dreams, your Harley and Ivies. You got A tier, which is like good, but not like, you know, game changing necessarily. Like your Robin Reckoning, Zatanna, Shadow of the Bat, stuff like that. You got our B tier, which is like fun and good, but not, you know, enough to put it into A. Like your Heart of Steel's Part One, Vendetta, Fear of Victory. And then we have tier C, which is like goofy fun episodes, but also ones that are like kind of like a fever dream, like Mad as a Hatter and Moon of the Wolf and Mudslide.
Tiger.
Who could forget that classic? Then we have It's Never Too Late tier, which hosts just the episode It's Never Too Late. And we have our tier Basement, which is the bottom of the barrel in terms of our critical synopsis. And
yeah, episodes we don't love.
Underdwellers, Cape and Cowl Conspiracy. Stuff like that.
Gross.
Zach, since you seem to really like this episode, I kind of want you to tip your hand first.
Okay.
You might be able to talk me into something.
So here's where I'm identifying that I think it should land. I like this episode, but I also don't think it's like the best thing ever. Like I would say like Be a Clown is the episode with Captain Clown, right?
No.
On the boat. What's Be
a
Clown?
Be a Clown is when he goes to the kid's birthday. And he kidnaps the mayor's son. He's Jekko the Clown, and it's the meme.
I would give this episode maybe around there. Like, I'm thinking, maybe worse than Be a Clown, above Fear of Victory, maybe below Fear of Victory, above Strange Secret. So I like this episode better than Cat and Claw Part 2. I think this episode's better than Heart of Steel.
So, do you like this more than The Mechanic? Which is the last Penguin episode we did where they hijacked the Batmobile. Because I think that that is better than this as a Penguin episode. And I think maybe perhaps we might have put The Mechanic too low.
Yeah, I don't know. I did forget about The Mechanic. So The Mechanic is the one, they've got the car. It's the actual mechanic guy. They're talking about the Batmobile.
Yep, and then they have to come up with the dummy corp under it. And we get to see the Penguin's lair, and then they hijack the Batmobile. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that episode is far superior to this.
Mm.
So I agree with you. Like, I would have to revisit Heart of Steel. I do like Heart of Steel Part 1 and Part 2, though. That's like AI versus Batman. You got all these Terminator robots that are replacing real people within Gotham's, like, police department and the mayor's office. And I think it's got some like really cool Blade Runner type like
sure
freaky stuff going on. But I'm thinking maybe we should have put the mechanic above Cat and Claw Part 2.
Well, so the time is not nigh for re-ranking things and removing shit around. But so if you think a mechanic is better, then I'm fine with putting this below that. But like,
Right below it, because literally this is so right much better than Cat Scratch Fever.
Yeah, Cat Scratch Fever.
What are we thinking with Cat Scratch Fever? We gotta move that to tier C. Like we got to.
So you think the new number 41?
I think that's fair, but that's only because I'm only doing this because I think mechanic is better, but I think we should have put mechanic higher as well. But this is not the time to move things. That'll be a game that we play at the end of the show.
Yeah. We'll make a new list at this time. We have to play the list where it lies. We have to say like, is it better than this? Is it worse than this? So
yep.
Yeah, I actually kind of agree. The mechanic is a weird one where it's like at number 40, but it kind of got lost in the shuffle. I think maybe we were just kind of like, oh, it's good, but it's not like anything game changing.
I think we watched it on a week. I think we watched it on the same week that we had The Man Who Killed Batman. And that, no pun intended, blinded us from being able to actually like think of it clearly as a really solid like single Penguin adventure with Batman. Sure. So.
Well, our B tier is starting to get pretty, pretty thick. It's B tier is like might be overtaking the other two in terms of the most episodes that is in it.
I think when we do a reshuffle, a lot of these bottom B tiers are just going to get moved to tier C.
Yeah, I do feel like Night of the Ninja, What is Reality, Vendetta, See No Evil, and Cat Scratch Fever could all be moved. Like the words tier C could be moved to 41.
I think we should just do that now. Later. We're more than halfway done. We owe it to ourselves, you know.
if this is the change you want to make, then I support it.
I think that is fair. We put a lot of those episodes in there when we only had like 30 things going on. And given, you know, hindsight's 2020, obviously, we didn't use the foresight to actually like balance the categories. They can't all be B, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you're saying that you would like to make the new separation for tier C to tier B at below Blind as a Bat.
Yep.
Okay.
What do you think?
I have no arguments and the motion passes.
Excellent. All right, cool. I am the Senate.
So there you have it, folks.
Tier
history,
C.
History in the making. Tier C gets a couple new, couple new additions.
Perfect. Awesome. And then we'll still do a little reshuffle towards the end.
Okay. Well, there it goes.
That looks a lot better. A lot better. All right. On to our next episode, The Demon's Quest, Part 1, written by Denny O'Neill and directed by Kevin Altieri. Before you talk about Kevin, Denny O'Neill is a longtime Batman scribe in the comic books. He is the creator of Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul. Him and Neil Adams did like serious landmark work on Batman that made him the Dark Knight that we know before even like major works from Frank Miller and stuff. They really revamped it from being the goofy, campy Adam West-like Batman show to an actual detective that solves crime and has evil villains that kill people and like all this kind of stuff. So they're, you know, big, big stamp of approval for Denny O'Neill. Denny O'Neill also is a creator of The Question, which is a cool DC Comics character. And Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams did what is arguably one of the best works of Green Lantern's storytelling career, which is Hard Traveling Heroes. You can get this as a full trade that collects the issues from the 80s. It is Green Arrow and Green Lantern on a road trip around the United States of America dealing with social issues in the 80s, which is just really cool. And that includes the famous comic, which has a storybird titled Snowbirds Don't Fly, which has a cover of Roy Harper, who is Green Arrow's sidekick, shooting heroin on the cover. So
fucking metal.
Check it out. It. Yeah. It's a cover in Green Arrow's. There's a word bubble coming out of Green Arrow and it says, "My ward is a junkie." And he's like, Kevin McAllister. It's wild stuff. Wild stuff.
Is that what you're going to say about me one day?
My ward is
a
junkie. I hope not. Did you have any facts for Kevin Altieri?
Yeah, Kevin Altieri, we've talked about this guy before, so he's no stranger to our podcast. He's directed many episodes, 22 episodes of Batman the Animated Series, including episodes we've talked about before, The Cat in the Claw, On Leather Wings.
We love On Leather Wings.
We love On Leather Wings. We love On Leather Wings pod right here.
Yep.
Feet of Clay, POV, The Clock King, The Last Laugh, Eternal Youth, Two-Face Part 1 and Part 2, Night of the Ninja, Heart of Steel Parts 1 and Part 2, The Mechanic. Shout out. We just talked about that.
Yo, shout out, Kevin.
And then he goes on to direct episodes in seasons 2, 3, and 4. So this guy is very involved for the rest of the series. Also directed, you know, sequence director on Mask of the Phantasm. This is the same guy that was a co-director on Pearl Jam, Do the Evolution. So we talk about that every time as a little shout out.
My guy. Kevin Altieri. All right. We can't do title card watch because we have a cold open. First time ever.
What? It's like the Rogue One siren.
I know. Yeah, cold open. At Gotham University, Dick Grayson comes home from a night of crime fighting as Robin. He gets into his dorm room and three figures are waiting in there for him and tranquilize him. Then we get our title card, The Demon's Quest. Now this title card, Zach, doesn't look like much, but what if I told you that when you're watching the episode that the title card moves? Because it's inside of the Batcave. I thought this was really cool. Really dope.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I loved
just from like a novelty perspective, you know?
Yeah, we'll talk about, you know, I'm going to save my thoughts for the episode as a whole until you finish your plot synopsis. But yeah, I thought the title card was great.
Right on.
Love the font. Think it's super cool. Tattoo
very
that.
Very medieval. Very like, cool. Like this guy's going on an adventure. You know what I mean? It's awesome.
Yes. Love
great
it.
Stuff. All right, buckle up for the plot synopsis because there is a lot of words, as most Denny O'Neill projects have. So I got to cover a lot of things. Here we go. Batman returns to the Batcave after another failed search for Robin. Alfred gives Batman an envelope that arrived earlier that evening, and it contains photos of Robin being held hostage with a prompt to save him. Suddenly, a voice emerges from the shadows of the cave, and along with it, two men. One of them tells Batman that the kidnappers clearly know his identity. Batman is outraged that someone snuck into the cave and asks who the mysterious speaker is, and he reveals himself to be none other than Ra's al Ghul. And he too has lost someone to the kidnapping lately, his daughter Talia, who you'll remember from Off Balance, which is an episode that we covered about a month ago. Ra's is stricken with a terrible cough and only cites his age as the cause, but does not want Batman to get distracted by that. Instead, he hopes that they can find their missing companions together. Batman, of course, pieces together that the dagger in the hostage photo comes from a very specific region in Calcutta, which, like, dude, this guy learned as fuck. Like, that is insane.
He knows some shit. He knows his geography.
Imagine if you saw a picture of me and I was, like, holding, I don't know, a bottle of Gatorade. And you're like, that bottle of Gatorade is only specifically known to one region in Cleveland, you know, or something. Like, that's insane.
That bottle is native to the Newburgh Heights.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a quick stop on the corner of whatever and whatever.
$15, little man. Ra's, Batman, and the bodyguard Ubu set out together, although Ubu will not allow anyone to walk in front of Ra's in their little group there.
So bad bodyguard name.
That becomes a running bit.
You got to get a better bodyguard name. Bad bodyguard name. Ubu.
I think Ubu is like, how do I say this? A cultural name from where he's from.
You got to change your name to like Jack or something.
Jack.
Bodyguard got to have a like a beefcake name, not Ubu.
Dominic Toretto. I like Ubu. Infidel is what he says every time Batman outrages him. Okay. On their way to India, Ra's tells Batman how he was able to discover Bruce's secret identity, and it's no wonder no one else has tried it before, honestly.
Great call,
he's just
Ra's.
Like, you're the only one that's rich enough to do it, and I put two and two together. There we go.
It's amazing. Like,
in Calcutta, our three travelers are ambushed by local ruffians. Batman makes fairly easy work for them and interrogates one of them into telling him that Robin and Talia have been taken to Malaysia in a hidden temple. As they drive through the rainforest in Malaysia, Ra's comments about how vital the forest is to the Earth's oxygen levels, but that the rich of the world earn profit from its destruction. Batman claims that Bruce Wayne donates millions of dollars to preserving rainforests, when Ra's implies that Wayne is partly responsible. Race counters that the money itself has not stopped the depletion of the forests worldwide, though. Only power and ruthlessness can do that. When they arrive at the temple, Batman darts in first and finds a map on the table. The door shuts behind him and a panther is released into the room. Batman uses the old cape distraction trick that we talked about on Mask of the Phantasm and subdues the panther. He just like puts a little sleeping mist in there. Good night, kitty, I think is what Kevin Conroy
says. Yeah, he does say.
Sleep tight, kitty.
Good night, kitty.
Batman finds a faint fingernail trace on the map that shows a route to the Himalayas. So we're globe trekking, dude. We're all over. It's like Indiana Jones and Uncharted. It's amazing. Batman is told to ascend the mountain and search for clues in the Himalayas. After he jumps out of the helicopter, a rocket hits it and explodes the craft. In the peak of the mountain, Batman finds a stronghold where Robin is being held. After Batman thwarts more ambushers, Robin's captor finally reveals themselves, and it was Ra's all along. Ra's asks Batman how long he knew that Ra's was the captor, and Batman says from the beginning, and many more clues were sprinkled throughout the journey. Talia is impressed with Batman's efforts as well, and Batman and Robin attempt to leave, but Talia pleads with Batman to stay because her father needs an heir, and she also loves him after meeting him once. Batman refuses, and Ra's passes out mid-rant. He's like about to tear Batman a new asshole, and then he just like has a heart attack and like falls over. Talia tells Batman that they must take him to the Lazarus Pit. She explains that the pit has kept Ra's alive for 600 years. They lower Ra's into the pit to revive him, and as he emerges swole and laughing as fuck hysterically, amid the cackling, he takes Talia hostage and hoists her above his head. To be continued. That's a lot of content, so a little more than 2 minutes, but the Demon's Quest. Zach, first of all, do you say Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul, like Christopher Nolan?
It's burned into my memory to say Ra's al Ghul, but Ra's al Ghul, I feel like, is what I say when I'm referencing Batman, the animated series, or when I'm referencing the Arkham games. So it depends on the canon in which I'm referencing the character, I suppose.
What if I told you that Denny O'Neill, the creator of Ra's al Ghul, says that it's Ra's al Ghul?
Then I would say that it's probably supposed to be pronounced Ra's al Ghul.
It's kind of like how Matt Reeves is like, it's kind of like how Matt Reeves is like, yeah, it's Carmine Falcone.
Falcone. But yeah. He did that just so that you could, the riddle works.
Falcon. Yeah. So stupid. Love that movie, but it was so
That's
weird.
The one riddle that I don't love in that entire movie.
Sure. But, yeah. Sure. Stool pigeon. what did you think of this episode?
I loved it. I thought it was great. I loved it. This might be the best episode of this show that isn't in the best episodes of the show, right? So I'm trying to put this in a more succinct way. I thought this episode had everything, right? It's got the action, it's got the drama, it's got the important characters that we all really want to hear about. The cold open, fucking perfect. Love the opening.
Terrifying. Like, imagine coming home to your room in college and there's a guy in there with the jackal masks.
Yeah, right.
It's just like, nope.
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. It's not going to, because of the nature of this episode and the nature of the episodes we have in the S tier, I really don't think it's going to rank very high in the series of episodes, just because of how stacked our list is of episodes. I thought that this episode was a fucking joy. I thought it was awesome the whole way through. I loved the cliffhanger. I loved everything. I know that I want to hear what you have to say about this episode, but can we just have a moment to talk about, and I just want to hear about young Johnny coming into age,
Talia.
Seeing Talia al Ghul
in that two-piece. Yeah.
Jesus H. Christ, Mary and Joseph. That is downright criminal.
I mean, you can understand why he sires a child with her named Damien. So, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, big time.
Young Jonathan, big fan of this episode and the second part.
Wonder why? Because they've got her in the skimpiest thing you've ever seen. And it's like, you must sire a child with this woman or whatever. It's like. And the look that Batman gives, he's like, he's the kombucha girl meme. That's Batman in this whole episode.
Well,
he's
no.
Like,
well,
no,
dude, the best is when the best is when Raish is like, and because my daughter loves you. And then she like brushes the hair out of her face. And Batman like kind of like looks away. And then he's like, let's go, Robin. And Robin looks at him and then looks at Talia. Then looks back. He's like, okay. It was just getting interesting though. It's so fucking funny.
Let's go, Robin.
Come on. We got to go back so I can beat off aggressively.
Yeah, that got a good laugh at me. But
for sure.
What did you think of the episode?
I love this episode. I think Ra's al Ghul is probably in my top three favorite Batman villains.
Wow. Top three.
Yeah, for sure. He is the one that is the most physically and intellectually matched for Batman, I think, that isn't a monster, if that makes sense. Like Clayface is obviously very physically imposing, not very smart. Joker is very smart, not very physically imposing. Obviously, the Joker is in that top three, but I love Ra's al Ghul. Always have been a big fan of both this iteration, which is my first exposure to it. I think he's fantastic in Batman Begins, portrayed by Liam Neeson.
So good.
He's played by David Warner in this. Great voice acting performance. That the character design too, with the streaks and like the sunken eyes and stuff like that. And then when he gets absolutely like Batfleck shredded when he comes out of the pit, is tight as hell.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And then I love the globetrotting aspect. It's like an Uncharted movie meets Batman. And I just think it's a really fun idea where it's like this guy is just testing him the whole time to see if he is up to snuff. Because like Talia has been doing the Belichick scouting reports. And he's like, let me see for myself real quick if this guy really is fit to lead the League of Shadows. And
yeah, you
know, he gets the tap. And then the fact that he refuses constantly is just such a... You got to think Ra's al Ghul, he's been alive for 600 years, never found a successor, can't sire a boy for some reason. And he's just like, finds this one dude who dresses up like a fucking bat and wears like a cape and stuff. And he just can't get him to sign up. It's like, that's got to be so frustrating.
Homie needs to get that chick on 90 Day Fiance because whatever he's doing is just not working out. And like Hinge, come on. Hinge, Tinder.
Well, he doesn't want to marry Talia off to any Joe Schmo. He needs somebody that, you know, understands his mission and will fulfill his job that he's carried on for 600 years, which is preserving the planet and its resources, even if that means, you know, like global genocide. But
got two words for Mr. Ra's here. Jim Gordon. He's got loins of steel and he can pass the sun on. His marriage is on the rocks. He doesn't know what's happening. I say just, you know, pawn Tali off on him.
Yeah, I genuinely think I love Andrea Beaumont. That's probably my favorite like Batman romantic partner of all time, just in terms of how that movie plays out, that relationship. Sure. But in the comics, games, and movies, as fun as the Catwoman relationship is, and I know there's a lot of big people that love that one out there, I think the Batman, Talia, and the whole Al Ghul family thing is just so much more interesting to me, where it's like they are a global terrorist organization that are like ninjas / whatever the fuck you need them to be. And it's just they just gotta absolutely, like, it's a weird thing to have somebody hate you and admire you at the same time. It's like everybody that meets Captain Jack Sparrow, you know what I mean?
But yeah, so it's just like,
yeah, exactly. So I just think that that's really cool. And I love the interplay with that. So big fan of Ra's al Ghul, big fan of the episode.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I mean, like, but to be fair, like, you know, maybe you view this differently. I like Talia al Ghul, but in this episode specifically, she's just used as an object. Like,
I agree.
Literally just used as
this
an object.
This is the Ra's episode for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
It's, but I don't think that's not a detriment to her character as a whole. But like in this episode, she shows up, she's like scantily clad. She comes in, she's like immediately supposed to be this eye candy.
She's like, beloved, no.
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck? I was like, I'm here for it. Don't get me wrong, I'm here for it.
Dude, come on,
like,
Ana de Armas as Talia in the fucking, make it happen.
But all jokes aside, I know that Dark Knight Rises is a hotly contested flick amongst folks. Yeah. I really like Marion Cotillard in the role. I just think that what they gave her to do was not great.
Yeah, I agree. She was actually like excellent casting. She's got the accent. She's like exotic enough
that,
for Bruce Wayne.
Dark and like, hair, the like
yeah,
sneaky,
the, and like also
look.
Her being Talia after playing Mal in Inception.
Totally.
Where like you're like, I'm kind of afraid of this woman. That's how you should feel about Talia. Totally. Right. And that's how Batman feels about her.
Yep.
What I like about Batman the Animated Series is that they introduced Talia first.
Yeah.
Like they did in Off Balance. That episode's really cool.
As like a strong, silent assassin. Like she's cunning. She could best Batman.
She's already proved her worth to Batman. And then now her dad is like a fucking super megalomaniac that is like wants to protect trees. You know what I mean? By killing people.
And then they bring her in on this episode and she's just like a little, she's like
Slave Leia.
Like a doll. Yeah. It's really weird. I don't think it was a detriment
like her pajamas. Like, why is she dressed like that? Like, because Batman was coming.
I literally think that it's because her father was like, you need to dress seductive to seduce this man.
I think she already was doing that of her own, like her own accord. I think she's like, I want to ride this bat until he's fucking dead. You know what I mean? So she's just like, you know, I think that's like an added bonus. Like in the comics and in the cartoon and in all iterations, like Talia does love Bruce Wayne. She's not just doing this because her dad's trying to marry her off. It's like they are both mutually interested in Bruce Wayne for different reasons. You know, Ra's is not trying to fuck him or anything like that, but like, he wants him to have his job and he wants his daughter to have a strong husband. It's like a, it's like the Sultan in Aladdin, but like really fucked up.
Prince Abubu.
Prince Abubu. Yeah, so is this where I get my take off about Ra's al Ghul? I think Ra's al Ghul is right.
Okay, please elaborate.
I think we're destroying the planet. I kind of wish he was around right now. I'm not saying he needs to do what he does in part two. But a strong political leader that is like kind of scary and has a army of ninja assassins, he would easily win the 2024 election. Easily.
Hmm. Should we make Radiovania merch that's Ra's for Prez 2024? Oh my God.
Yeah. It's like Al Ghul Abu. Ubu 2024.
No, who would be his running mate? The Al Ghul family.
Yeah. No, it'd be Ra's al Ghul and Dick Cheney.
Oh my God, he raised him from the dead from a Lazarus pit. We had a good God of all the politicians. We do not need to put Dick Cheney in a Lazarus pit.
God. And then that brings me to my next question before we rank this thing and talk about our favorite animation.
Right.
How do you feel about the Lazarus pit?
So
this isn't your first exposure because it's in the Arkham City game, but yeah.
No, it's not my first exposure to the Lazarus Pit as a concept, but it's always been something that I'm like, not really, like, I don't know what the rules. What are the rules?
I don't even know the rules in the second part, so, like, it's totally fine, but
yeah.
I think it's like, cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't understand, like, it's like, she kind of has a brief, is it in this episode that she has the description where she's like, it's from the tectonic plates of the earth shifting and then the magic comes forth from the... So it's like inner earth core lava magic that comes
It's just
the
like, it's just very ancient science. Like, it's just like, it's not even magic necessarily. It just has like medicinal properties in it that are so old that they are able to keep them alive.
But it can only be, it's organically created. It's not like Jesus Christ set forth a Lazarus pit. It's like, the earth has a Lazarus pit. Here it is.
Yep. There's multiple pits around the world. You know what I mean?
It's just every time. Here's my thing. This is stupid.
Every time they need a pit, they got a pit.
Use the pit. Every time they say the Lazarus pit, the only thing I can fucking think of is Michael Caine in Interstellar when he's like, Lazarus came back from the dead. He's like,
I thought you were gonna say
the Lazarus missions. It's like, well, Lazarus came back from the dead, and I'm like, oh, that's why they call it a Lazarus pit.
I thought you were gonna say the pit from Dark Knight Rises.
No, in Christopher Nolan's Interstellar, they talk about the Lazarus missions, which are the missions that they sent out these people to the different wormholes to go explore these other galaxies, and they called it the Lazarus missions because the Lazarus was a famous biblical character that died and was resurrected. He was one of the only other people, according to biblical history or whatever you want to fucking call it, according to the Bible, that was
Bible story.
That died and then was resurrected, that was not Christ. So
I think it's a dope name. Like, calling it the cool Lazarus name. Pit is sick. Like, Denny O'Neill, great with monikers. It's good stuff. You know what I mean? You know, like, he's a very clever writer, and the way that he has Ra's call Batman the detective all the time and stuff too is really dope. But
to be fair, though, he didn't have much of a choice because you can't call it a Lazarus hole.
Lazarus hole. You want this Lazarus hole? I'm trying to get that Lazarus hole.
He didn't have much of a choice. Didn't take that one.
I guess I just meant using the word Lazarus, not necessarily the pit part, but the pit. I fell into the pit.
Yeah. It's the bring you back from the dead hole.
The rules are, you're right. The rules are not very clearly stated. They have used it in DC Comics to revive other people, such as Jason Todd and other stuff.
Yeah.
I think it's not like, I almost feel like it's one of those things where it's like, you don't really think about it. Like, once you stop thinking about it, you're just like, you're like, yeah, it's the Lazarus Pit. That's what it is. It's like how in Star Wars, nobody has ID at all. And they're just like, it doesn't matter. Like, you don't need identification. You don't need to see his identification. But
I don't need to see his identification.
Yeah.
The concept of the pit does not bother me. I was just saying that, like, I have limited exposure to what it is. I don't really care.
Sure.
It's a way to bring people back from the dead. Whatever.
Yeah. I like how they use it in the Arkham City game too. I think that's really cool. That's a great mission too, when you go to the pit underground and like Ra's has the League of Shadows down there. So sick. Okay. Did you have a favorite cell of animation?
Totally selfishly. I loved the shot of Talia coming into the room for the first time, just in the way that it just got a laugh out of me. Like the way that she's dressed, the way that she looks, the hair, the black hair in front of the face. Also shout out to, I like them lowering Ra's into the Lazarus pit, like the body in the coffin.
It's like
the
Temple
sort of
Doom.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Kalima.
So,
lots of good stuff here. But yeah, to piggyback off what you were saying earlier, another reason why I like this episode so much is like the diverse nature of how it looks. It's a globe-trotting episode. It's basically an episode of Indiana Jones mixed with Batman. And so when they're like, Calcutta and then Malaysia, and it's got like the different, it's like you could tell that they spent some money working on this episode in terms of like the cost of animation. So
yeah,
I liked all that stuff. But did you have a favorite cell?
It's the moment where he grabs the guy off the ground in Calcutta to interrogate him, and it's twofold. It's A, the actual close-up side shot of Batman interrogating the guy, but then it pans back and Ra's is like watching like Palpatine. He's just like, he's like very pleased with what he's seeing, which I think that is really cool.
Have you ever heard the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
Legend, Mr. Wayne. All right, let's trivia. Rank this. Oh, trivia, sorry.
Thank you. This episode is a close adaptation of the story of Batman with Robin, the Teen Wonder, Volume 1, from June 1971, called Daughter of the Demon, which is
in the doc, Batman 232.
Cool. First appearance of Ra's al Ghul in the Batman comics. Both this episode and the comic are written by Denny O'Neill, and the comic featured art by Neil Adams and Dick Giordano. So I don't know if you want to touch on this now.
Yeah. So I put the cover down there for you to see. It's the green one. Batman 232. Grail for your boy, if I could ever find one. I don't care what grade it's in. I would totally love to have the first appearance of Ra's al Ghul. I think that's
beautiful cover.
It's awesome, as is most Neil Adam covers. I love the way Ra's looks in the background. They clearly adapted this almost, you know.
I like the random design. Uzi coming out of the bottom.
Yeah, the guy just murking Robin. Yeah. Very good book. And then the second part is based off of another Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams book in Batman 244, which I put underneath it, which we'll talk about the next time. But that's an even sicker cover, I think. Like, I think Batman 244 is a cooler cover. Got the fucking hairy chested Batman and Ra's. It's awesome. Good stuff.
No listings for Daughter of the Demon on eBay. Is that like a really, really sought after one?
Yeah.
Oh, I see one. Never mind. $500 or best offer.
Not bad.
Grade, mid grade. So a loose, essentially loose Batman 232, $500. That might be your Christmas, birthday, next year's Christmas, and next year's birthday present.
Every Christmas, till the end of time. Yeah.
All right, next trivia fact. The address of Wayne Manor is given as 1007 Mountain Drive, Gotham. Is that the first time we've ever heard that?
I think so. Yeah, that's funny. Mountain Drive, very obvious.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the two-part episode doesn't feature a title card directly after the opening credits, instead going straight to Robin's kidnapping. So this is the first. I think this is the first and only time in the series that this happens, unless there's something else.
No,
that
I don't think I don't this know ever happens. Well, Laughing Fish didn't have a title card, if you remember that.
But it does have the best opening in all of Batman the Animated Series, which is just the static opening of the fish shop with the Laughing Fish over top of it. Perfect. Eep. Perfect. Better than anything Martin Scorsese has ever directed. Fuck
whoa,
you.
Whoa. Fuck hey. You,
it's the best. It's the best. It's that is cinema. The Laughing Fish is cinema. That's perfect television.
It's so good.
The episode is included as a bonus cartoon from the DC's Comic Vault on the Blu-ray release of Batman: The Doom That Came to Gotham.
It's a good one.
And the ending of the episode with a dying Ra's al Ghul being dunked in the Lazarus Pit to be rejuvenated back to life is taken from the ending of Batman 243 from August 1972 called The Lazarus Pit, again written by Denny O'Neil with art by Neil Adams and Dick Giordano.
Sweet.
So 1972. Original of Lazarus Pit. So,
oh, yeah. All right. Rankings. Rankings, rankings, rankings. S tier for me.
Rankings. Time to rank this bullshit. Rank that fucking shit. Yeah, S tier.
But where and why?
So here's the thing, though. Are we just ranking this S tier because both you and I like it? Is this like a war? Is this
no,
a renowned
this is
episode?
A,
this is a renowned episode.
This is a good one. Yeah.
So here's what I'll say. Gut check moment here. I like this better than Harley and Ivy.
Me too.
I think I like this better than The Man Who Killed Batman, but not better than Two-Face.
That's where I'm hung up. I don't know if I like it more or less than Two-Face. That Two-Face is so good.
I'm just partial to Two-Face as a villain and the crime stuff of Gotham. So
I understand. I love that stuff too. It's hard to pick.
I think that this episode is good. I think it's weird. The Talia stuff is questionable with like the...
That's a good point.
The objectivity of her as a character. I think that Two-Face is a better, just like straightforward crime narrative. I think if it hits the top five, it's better than The Man Who Killed Batman, but it doesn't go any higher.
I think it's better than The Man Who Killed Batman. I'm cool with putting it at five.
So the new number five.
Love it. I think it's great.
What's this fucking called?
The Demon's Quest.
The Demon's
part
Quest.
One. It's also just a sick title. Like, come on. The Demon's Quest? It's dope.
Okay.
The head of the demon's head. Yeah.
So this week's episode, we have a new S tier episode.
New S tier.
It's all
our
S tier
is still strong. I wouldn't move any of them out of it so far.
No, no way. No way. Not a chance.
All right. The Demon's Quest Part 2, written by Danny O'Neill and Len Wein. Got some help with this. And then directed by Kevin Altieri again. Panning title card this time. So comes up and then it pans down from the cave ceiling with all the stalactites into the scene that we were previously in the to be continued part. So what'd you think about this versus the cold open title card?
It's fine.
Yeah, it's cool. It's okay. I love the part two. You know,
I like
I love
the part
two.
I will. You know, I love part two. I like the part two. I'm a sucker for the part two. I like
Godfather
that.
Part two, Last of Us Part two, The Bear Part two, The Demon's Quest Part two.
Yeah, anytime a series does a part two where it's like big lit part two, I'm like,
yeah. Alan Wake, right, you two.
Oh, yeah, dude. Dick hard part two. Massive cock.
Dick is hardest.
So late at night.
Uno memento.
Yeah, woof. Sorry about that one, everybody.
That's right.
I'm not cutting that from the edit.
Don't. All right, plot synopsis. Ubu asked Batman to stop Ra's from harming Talia, claiming that the chemicals drive the revived person mad for a moment. Batman saves Talia, and she gives Ra's a big old slap in the face to wake him up from his fit. Ra's again pleads with the detective to marry Talia and carry on the Al Ghul legacy, since he is unable to do it one day soon. Batman plays hard to get, and Ra's sentences Batman and Robin to their doom by trapping them in a collapsing cavern. Batman and Robin climb out of the top and escape an avalanche down the mountain. And they're like, we gotta go stop Ra's. Batman tells Robin that they have to stop Ra's before he wipes out the planet's population to realize his dream of an environmental conservation. The only information that Robin can recall from captivity is the word Orpheus. Bruce and Dick use the Wayne Enterprises Nepal branch office to research the word, which is just so awesome, by the way. It's just great. They learn that there's a private satellite that owns the name Orpheus, and it must belong to Raish since it orbits. What just happened? A desert in Africa. Batman parachutes into the desert and slips into a caravan of camels by disguising himself as the rider. Really funny scene. I love it. The caravan arrives at the Al Ghul compound, and Batman sneaks off to find Raish, and John Parker almost went and played Uncharted 3. He runs into Ubu and is taken into custody after a brief fight. Raish arrives to see the trespasser and admits further admiration of Batman's persistence. Raish orders Batman's gear to be taken away and leaves Bruce blasting bare chest and cowl that would fit in at Burning Man. Can you imagine? Just like we go to Burning Man and we wear Batman cowl.
This is a great look. This is like a Halloween costume ready to happen. It's like hot shirtless Batman.
Yeah, on par with like dad bod Spider-Man.
Yeah, right.
He then gives in and tells Batman his plan. Raish had his team place bombs near every known Lazarus pit around the globe, all controlled by the Orpheus satellite. Once triggered, the whole planet will be covered in the pit's contents and it will wipe out 2 billion people, but leave the resources of the Earth able to replenish and start anew. Batman is imprisoned for a brief moment, but slips his captors and sabotages the stronghold's armory. Batman then dispatches Ubu and then duels with Raish for command of the control panel. They sword fight, dude. They fucking sword fight. It's dope. It's totally Uncharted 4. Love it. A well-timed sword throw from Batman knocks out the signal for the Orpheus satellite. Raish misses with a sword strike and falls into the pit without a way of getting out, presumably drowning. Batman and Talia leave the stronghold, and Talia explains that she shares the vision of Raish, but not the same means to the end. They smooch on the dunes, and then Batman leaves her to watch him fly off in a plane. A hand emerges from the pit, and ominous laughing rings out. The Demon's Quest, Part 2. I can't hear what you're playing, but I hope it's the Uncharted theme.
It is the Uncharted theme. And these microphones are so good, Zoom.
They're so good, yeah.
Yeah,
it's no, really good. No non-royalty music, you know? What did you think of this second part?
I don't know. I think so. Here's what we talked about this at the very beginning. I think I'm discovering a theme with these two-parters is that typically I like the first part better.
You like, and I think exposition. that's because
where all the exposition is. This second episode is not bad, but it's all action and none of it is incredibly compelling. I thought the end was pretty decent with like the sword fight and all that stuff and like the Orpheus thing with the signal, but like everything else I just thought was like totally run of the mill and there's really not a whole lot of substance to the episode. So I didn't love it. I think that this is the first one where it's like, we actually might see like, not only is it like worse than the first part for me personally, but I think that it's actually like quite a bit worse than the first part. Like it's really? Not like,
wow.
Yeah. I just didn't vibe with it. I didn't think that the action was like, I thought the action was stellar, but that was about it.
See, I feel this as a completely attached second part to the first one. Like, still globetrotting adventure. You got Batman disguising himself as a camel rider. Like, he's wearing the cape and cowl underneath, like, the costume. And he's riding on a camel in the caravan. The animation of them crossing the desert is just beautiful. It's like the Mummy. You know what I mean?
Totally don't disagree.
Looks great. I love the stronghold fight. Like as soon as he gets there and he's like, they like take all of his stuff and he's blasting bare chest and he's like, well, you at least gotta, you know, explain how this is supposed to work and everything. It's like a total Bond movie ending, which I love. I love those old Bond movies, so maybe that's why I'm partial to this. But I also just think that I think the plot is actually like pretty sound. Like it makes sense to me. You know, it's way more well thought out than like the Cat and the Claw Part 2, where Red Claw we're just gonna use nukes, and it's like, this is like he's strategically lined up the satellite signals with all these pits, and like every brick that has been laid in the first episode actually like comes to a good climax here with both, you know, he gets to reconcile his differences with Raish, he finally one-ups Ubu, and he gets to have like a nice sentimental moment with Talia in a way that is definitely not in part one, in a very weird way, like we just discussed. Like, I think that that ending there where she's like, listen, I'm not going to stop doing what our family's doing, but like, I don't necessarily need to blow up the entire world. And plus, like, that visual image of them kissing on the dune is like,
oh, it's beautiful.
It's iconic. It's also like in the comics too. Like, that is an image that is referred to a lot.
Yeah.
In Batman Talia stuff. And just from that alone, like, I love the episode. I don't think it's as good as the first part. Because it like you said, it's more flash than substance, but I still think there's a lot of substance here, more than the other part twos. So
yeah, I would disagree with your
statement there where you said it's a significant drop off from the first one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when I'm saying significant drop, I mean, like, in terms of like where it ranks on our list, like, it's going to be more separated than a lot of our other part ones and part twos, I think.
Mm.
I mean, obviously we need to come to a consensus, but like all the things that you pointed out, totally don't disagree with, like the imagery of Batman and Talia, all the desert stuff. Like, I thought that was all great. And the animation style is beautiful, but like, so no shots against that. No taking any of that away. I just think that like, with how strong the first episode was in building like a secretive narrative and like an intrigue and all this stuff, like, I thought that the payoff just didn't necessarily fit all the buildup. Like, I did not feel like this was the most satisfying conclusion to what the first episode set up. And maybe, you know, maybe I need to watch it again. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's also just because like, I'm not as connected with Ra's as a character. Like, I don't know, but yeah. Visually it's like unparalleled. Like the desert stuff alone is some of the best looking Batman stuff we've seen.
Yeah. I think it's like a really, like, my favorite two-parters for villains are definitely this and Two-Face, for obvious reasons. But Two-Face Part 2 has like a significant time jump, and then also like, he's so far removed from the character that's in Part 1 because he's all Harvey in the first one. Whereas like this one is, and I kind of like that dichotomy, you know, that's literally Two-Face. And so I think that that's why that two-parter works really well.
Yeah.
Whereas like this one just feels like one big episode to me at times. But because of the format of this show, we got to do it this way. And I think that everything they do in part one with Ra's is like, you know, talking about the rainforest and how sometimes, you know, like, ruthlessness is required to make stuff happen. I think that is very much paid off in the second one, where you're like, oh, this guy's actually willing to go to like wipe out the planet and drown us all in green sludge to achieve his ends. You know what I mean? Like, he like ramps up the stakes in a way that hasn't happened on Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe it was just because the first time I've ever seen these episodes, but like last night I watched these episodes back to back, and like, I just felt like a dissonance between the two of them. I did not feel like they really connected all that well. Mm. Other than the fact that it's Ra's al Ghul and like acting off his plans, but it's like,
yeah,
you know, you get a little bit of like the love thing going on with Batman and Talia, but like, to me, it just didn't seem as connected as you thought. Like, maybe I missed it. Maybe I just need to go back and give it another round, but.
I like the sword fight a lot too. I love a good sword fight.
I mean,
fight
dude, the anything. Sword fight is fucking titties. I love. Yeah, it's dope. It gave me kind of shades of the episode where we compared Batman to the Northmen, where they have like the magma fight. It was kind of like that. It reminded me of that quite a bit.
Like in Day of the Samurai. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome episode.
Really good episode. All right. You got trivia?
So the trivia for this episode is almost identical to the last episode, so there's really nothing else to say.
Yeah, based off of Batman 244, which we just talked about, really cool cover. The Demon Lives Again, really dope stuff. Did you have a favorite cell of animation? Mine's the kiss, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to beat that moment, man. I mean, I knew that was going to be probably the popular pick. It's just such a cool image, like...
If it's not that, then it's
buff Batman.
The caravan probably is really cool. Like, really cool. I love how the guy like looks back and then Batman like just hurried, like got on the camel like so fast. It's just really funny.
Yeah.
All right. Let's rank it then. I'm curious to see your gut instinct, because I went first last time. What's your gut tell you?
So
do you need to use the old On Leather Wings rule?
No, I wouldn't put it that low. Okay. I think that this is probably like, I don't know, around Zatanna. That's what I'm feeling. Like, I don't, I think I like POV better. I think I like Feet of Clay Part 2 better. I think I like The Last Laugh better. Joker's Wild is better than this. Like, that Joker's Wild is the casino episode, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that way better than this. But like, I don't think it's, I don't think it, maybe it sneaks to the top of B tier for me. I really don't know. Like, it's somewhere like mid to low A. I think I would be remiss
if it wasn't an A. I don't think it's in S, but I think mid A is probably fair. I definitely like it more than Zatanna and POV and Feet of Clay Part 2. Just because, like, as fun as those episodes are, and the, you know, all of the A tier ones are really good, rewatchable episodes of Batman the Animated Series. Like, A tier to me is like, I want to just throw this on when I'm hungover Saturday, Sunday morning. You know what I mean? If it's not,
if it's not one of the S tier ones, the crime drama of POV, like the multi-character thing, the burning building, all that stuff.
It's great. This is the only episode of Batman the Animated Series with a dope sword fight in the desert. Like, that is unique enough. There's a lot of crime drama in other episodes, you know?
Sure.
Like, this is a wholly unique experience for me, but I wouldn't put it higher than The Last Laugh, I don't think.
Okay,
but
make your
case for the 23 to 26 range.
No, I'm not gonna get that petty. I'll take it. Here's what I'll say. I'll just take it as low as it'll go in A. So like, I think that it's an A tier episode, but where it lands, I'm not necessarily gonna be upset about. Personally, for me, if I was ranking this, and we weren't a two person podcast, but this is what we are. We're a family here.
Mm-hmm. We got family. I don't got friends. I got family.
I would put this at, I think right now, gut reaction, above On Leather Wings, but below Appointment on Crime Alley. But
you like the Batgirl two-parter better than this ending.
Sure.
Really?
Trust me. Hey, if I ever go back and watch these episodes again, I'll just watch the first part of this and then just end it.
Oh, man. That's such a cliffhanger, though.
I love it though. It's so good. That first part is so good.
I agree.
Maybe it's because I'm bummed that like the first part is like a 10 out of 10 and then the second part is like a 7-8 out of 10.
That's still pretty good.
It is pretty good, but it's like I just wanted something that was going to compete with the first part. The Demon's Quest is a top 5 episode now, and I thought that Demon's Quest Part 2 would be a top 5, maybe top 10, but it's not even that to me. It's like top 30. We're in the minutia realm here.
What if I told you that this was our last two-parter?
That can't possibly be true. Is that true?
Yeah.
Are you fucking serious, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of pretty a bummer.
Sure. Let me look.
Either way, though, I'm fine with putting it.
Yeah, the only other multi-part episode is The World's Finest Movie and Sub-Zero.
Got it. Damn, that's crazy.
Yep. So we don't have to do this anymore after this one.
It's a blessing and a curse, but
I think so too.
Where did you want to put it? Below Feet of Clay or above Feet of Clay? Below The Last Laugh?
I actually think I'd like it more than Cat in the Claw Part 1. But
less than you The Last Laugh.
But you want to put it near Appointment on Crime Alley and On Leather Wings. So why don't we compromise and put it between POV and Zatanna? Well, because otherwise then I just get to pick wherever I want it.
But I'm quality-wise conceding. I'm going off a personal thing, but like for compromise sake, I'm saying like I would be fine with it going below The Last Laugh. I don't want it. I don't think that it goes any higher than The Last Laugh. But if you want to put it above Cat in the Claw Part 1, I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, because if this was a one-person podcast, I would put it right underneath Robin's Reckoning Part 2.
Ooh, wow. Wow, wow. Above Two-Face and Joker's Wild. Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that's crazy talk.
Oh, yeah. Sword fight.
Oh, no. All right. Well, I think it goes to new number 23. Let's call it that. Compromise.
Jordan, new 23.
Jordan. All right. So what?
LeBron Demon's James. Quest Part 2? Yep. Demon's Quest Part 2. Sweet. Last two-parter. So all of our two-parters that we've covered on Radio Vision, Cat in the
Every
Claw.
Every one of the second parts has been lower than the first.
Except for Heart of Steel. We liked Heart of Steel Part 2 more.
Oh, yeah, we did.
And Robin's Reckoning, we liked Part 2 more because he actually like has some cool stuff there. It's not a flashback the whole time.
Well, how about that? I guess it doesn't matter.
But, that's you know, most of them. So, yeah, we've covered the Heart of Steel Part 1 and Part 2, Cat in the Claw Part 1 and Part 2, Feet of Clay Part 1 and Part 2, Robin's Reckoning Part 1 and Part 2, Shadow of the Bat, The Demon's Quest, and Two-Face. With Two-Face and The Demon's Quest cracking our top five.
Hell yeah.
For each of those, respectively.
Yeah, I mean, Two-Face Part 1, Demon's Quest Part 1. Man, just two fantastic episodes of this show. Just so fucking good all around. Love it. Love the tone.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see what goes on, you know, from this point forward. But, you know, these two-parters, like,
yeah, I there are more Ra's al Ghul episodes. Yeah.
I'm excited.
Curious to see if you like them more than the Demon's Quest Part 2. I don't think there's another episode that's as good with him than Demon's Quest Part 1, but there's still some strong stuff. But yeah, sounds pretty sweet. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. On our next Radio Vision, we will be covering three episodes: His Silicon Soul, Fire from Olympus, and Read My Lips. We get two new villains next time we do this, which will be fun.
Okay.
Both like C tier villains, which I think will make for even more fun conversations. Maybe even B tier, depending on what you're talking about. I don't know about the episodes themselves because I haven't seen them in a while, but should be a fun week. Thank you guys for listening. Zach, thank you for joining me. My great detective, my beloved. I enjoy doing this with you every time.
My beloved. Fucking Talia, man. So here's the question. Like, I mean, just to end this episode with like a random question. Sure. When they do bring Talia back for like any sort of Batman canon, like how do you, like in a movie, like how do you want that to go down? Like, would you want it to be more like this version of Talia, or do you
want it to be like off balance? Okay. Like I want it to be like femme fatale spy lady for sure.
So Ana de Armas is the pick.
I actually think James Gunn, since he has already said that Brave and the Bold will have Damian as Robin, that means you don't actually need to introduce Ra'sh immediately to introduce the Al Ghuls. You could actually probably, and you should probably start with Talia because that's Damian's mom. So that's my pick, though. I think she would be perfect. Perfect. Well, the way she looks in No Time to Die is exactly what I pictured Talia looking like in modern movies. She even has the animated series hairstyle where it's like, yeah, it's great. Good stuff. Go check out that movie.
No Time to Die.
What about you?
What's the song? The song from No Time to Die. It's
Billie Eilish.
To float. Now I just want.
Oh man.
What about me?
Yeah, what would you want?
Ana de Armas is fine. I think that's a good pick. I think that's a great pick, like visual wise. But I don't know. I like the femme fatale vibe. I like that vibe more than, as much as we like the Demon's Quest Part 1, I think I would appreciate Talia being more of a femme fatale than just like an object, I think, in whatever movie they do.
For sure. For sure. Well, check us out on, you know, the next couple iterations of this, as well as Radiovania. We just had our 2023 year in review pod go up today.
Great episode.
Go check that out. Really great episode. We talk about all of our favorite shows, movies, video games, etc. from last year. You can find all that again at radiovania.com. You can send us anything that you want us to talk about on Radio Vision or Radiovania at radiovaniashow@gmail.com. Check us out on the socials, Radiovania Show on Instagram, where you can see those pod announcements coming up. Zach, looking forward to the next iteration of this. We are on the back half of the hill now, man. We are sprinting down the hill to the end of this. I sent you a schedule for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
By the time we are done with this, we will have 40 episodes of Radiovision. I like that nice round number.
No, it's beautiful. I mean, like, looking ahead at the episodes too, it's like, oh man, there's a lot of really cool stuff, and it's crazy to look at. You know, I mean, you know, all these episodes there with a retrospective too. It's like, man, this show, we this originally started as a passion project, and just look where it's gotten us, where we are now. It's great.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. I'm excited for this back half. I think at this point, you know, with the exception of a handful of characters, almost every villain has been introduced. So now we've reached the point where each week there's at least an iconic Batman villain, or sometimes two. You know what I mean? Like, right. When we first started this, our first episode was like great. It had Man-Bat and Joker and Poison Ivy. But then like our third episode had Underdwellers and the Forgotten. Oh, and like,
yeah,
I've got Batman in my basement. It was just like, it was a rocky start for the production side of things. And like, once they really found their footing in the show developing, like having all these cool iconic moments has just been so fun. And we have a lot of cool stuff coming up. There is definitely still some S-tier episodes down there, ooh, down the road, baby, that I'm excited for us to hit as a fan of certain characters and things. And
can't wait.
Really excited to talk about Sub-Zero. You know, yeah, no anniversaries for anything like that in the same way that we did for Mask of the Phantasm this year. We're just going to kind of rope it into the watch order for this. And we will treat that entire Radiovision episode as what would be three parts, essentially, as one film topic. But, you know, right, those would be ample opportunities to probably bring on some guests and things. We're going to get to see some Superman later on, too. I'm excited for that for you. Love that movie. Clancy Brown, Lex Luthor, GOAT. And the reuniting of Kevin Conroy and Dana Delaney in that is really cool. And then, yeah, man, just like rounding it out by kind of giving our final thoughts, closing thoughts, and then closing the book on this chapter of Radiovision will be really fun. So,
hell yeah, dude. What a journey.
In other words,
2024, baby.
Yep. In other words, don't go anywhere, pretty much, because we got some good stuff coming down the pipe. And check us out again next time. Same Bat Podcast, same Bat Podcast feed. Good night.